Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, Spectator's daily politics podcast. Philip Hammond is preparing for a happy life in the backbenches, celebrating his impending release today by giving an interview to Le Monde, where he said that he would do anything within his power to prevent a no-deal Brexit. Yes, that's the same Philip Hammond who's been in charge of preparing Britain's plans for a no-deal Brexit for the last 3 years. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. So, James, no great surprise in one level, but in another level, he is still Chancellor of the Exchequer. And in the old days, if you fundamentally disagreed with the policy you were asked to implement, you'd have a decency to resign. Now, what he's effectively saying is, you know, I never believed in this. Every time I stood in front of parliamentary committees and told them that my no-deal preparations were going well, that I, Philip Hammond, could be trusted with them, I was actually talking through my nose. And in fact, I never believed in this, and I'm now going to do everything I can to stop it. It's rather extraordinary.
I think this Philip Hammond interview in Le Monde is one of the most irresponsible acts by a British politician that I can think of in recent years. There is a great irony here. Philip Hammond thinks of himself as a grown-up in the room, as a responsible person. But what he is actually doing here is making no deal more likely.
Why?
Because he is going to the European press to tell EU leaders, don't worry, Parliament's going to stop no deal. We're going to step in and stop the new Prime Minister from doing this. But as his fellow rebel, Dominic Grieve, admits, they don't have a certain way of stopping no deal unless they're prepared to bring down the government. And I don't think it is by any means certain that the numbers are there for yet for that. So if we look at what Philip Hammond is saying, he is essentially making both a no deal Brexit and a Corbyn government more likely. And I ask you, is that the actions of a political grown-up?
But, Isabel, we're seeing quite a few Tory MPs go this way, and it is, as James might say, the sensible people. Dominic Grieve, QC, Oliver Letwin, a sort of princeling of the Conservative grandees. Other quite esteemed people are becoming the new Gawkward squad, to use the David Gawk. I'm not sure David Gawk deserves leadership of this, but what Philip Hammond is saying is you can expect this awkward squad to be loud, dedicated and determined.
I think a lot of people who've worked with Oliver Letwin would question the use of the adjective sensible in relation to him, given he did a lot of his filing in a bin at one stage. But yes, it shows how the pendulum in politics can swing, and it's not always the case that one wing of the party is always going to be the what Philip Hammond describes here as deliberately noisy, vulgar and thoughtless, which is a criticism of his fellow countrymen, but actually could probably also apply to the way that he and some of his fellow rebels are also behaving as they prepare for a Boris Johnson premiership. And it just shows that even though the Tory party is historically and famously focused on winning, and it's sort of that's been its kind of raison d'etre, its other reason for existing is often just to fight one another. And they love winning elections, but they also love trying to chuck people out of windows. And I think we're going to see a great deal more of that over the next few months, and a great deal more of threats of that as well, even if they don't actually come to the point of fatally undermining Boris Johnson.
Now, James, this is the big question, isn't it? Because we had this great big rebellion against the government this week. We had four cabinet members defy the whip and not vote with the government. We had the House resolve that it would not allow prorogation of Parliament. But that is, in a way, a pretty easy vote to take. A harder vote to take would be to vote down a Conservative government. And many people believe that that is the only real way of stopping a no-deal Brexit. So do we think, how angry do we think Philip Hammond is? Is he saying that he loathes Boris Johnson so much but he wants to take him down? We had Dominic Grieve on Newsnight last night saying, yet again, that that Boris Johnson might not be around by the 31st of October because he, Dominic Grieve, might see to it that he wasn't if he was going to go for a no-deal Brexit. So do we think that Philip Hammond is going down the Dominic Grieve route of thinking, I would rather a Corbyn government than a Boris no-deal Brexit?
I think that Philip Hammond is quite deliberately leaving the door open to voting against the government in a confidence vote if it was going for no deal. I think there is a problem, which is one of the rules of Brexit is that when people look at any document, whether it be an opinion poll or a legal text, they only see in it what confirms their own opinion. And at the moment, I was speaking to one of the Tory MPs who, 17 Tory MPs who rebelled yesterday, and their view is, oh, an early election wouldn't lead to a Corbyn government. Look at how Labour are losing Remain voters. It would lead to another hung parliament, but a hung parliament in which the constellation of forces were such that the Liberal Democrats, for example, might end up holding the balance of power. And so you'd be able to put together a pro-second referendum government of some stripe. And that, so that would be the outcome rather than a Corbyn government. I think that anyone, you know, who could predict how what would be a four-party general election, the first time we've had a four-party general election in mainland Great Britain, would play out, is talking arrant nonsense. It is a massive risk that you could, that the four-party election could end up in a situation where you either had Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister, because Labour were the largest party, but he had to rely on the SNP, so you get the double whammy of a Corbyn government and a second Scottish independence referendum. Or it could create a situation where the dynamics were, it was even more hung, so that there was no possibility of any progress on any kind of Brexit outcome, because the Brexit Party had taken a bunch of seats off the Tories, the Lib Dems had got more seats, but no position at all had a majority. So you had a kind of another a parliament that is even more, if it's possible to believe, even more deadlocked and useless than this one.
Isabel, I was told by a senior Tory a few minutes ago that Philip Hammond is likely to walk out of the government on Wednesday with about four or five other people. In other words, Boris gets announced party leader on Tuesday. Everybody knows that Hammond and a whole bunch of others are for the high jump, but they would stage this sort of dramatic walkout, jumping, or rather self-fenestrating, before Boris defenestrates them. Do you think we're going to see something like that? I mean, it seems strange to have a sort of petulant pre-resignation, but anything can happen nowadays, I suppose.
Yeah, I think we are, and there are other ministers who I've spoken to who haven't yet been named as those who are planning to resign, who have told me they're definitely going to walk out next week, not as soon as the announcement is made, but within the hours afterwards.
Okay.
And actually, it reminds me a little bit of when Jeremy Corbyn got elected Labour leader. When he was in the process of accepting his victory, there was a letter released by Jamie Reid, the then MP for Copeland, who was a shadow minister, and he announced he was resigning from that role because he couldn't reconcile himself with Jeremy Corbyn's brand of Labourism or socialism or Marxism, as he actually called it in his letter. And that sort of set the tone, I think, for the way in which the opponents of Jeremy Corbyn in that party really then behaved, which was with what some could quite easily characterise as petulance that he'd won rather than some self-examination because they'd failed. And I think we're going to see quite a bit of that in the Conservative Party.
James, on the subject of self-examination, we're going to have the Liberal Democrat leadership hustings tonight, where the Lib Dem members will be examining Jo Swinson and Ed Davey. How much of a contest is this, do you think?
I think it is, in a way, remarkable how little attention this contest is getting, considering where the Lib Dems are in the polls and considering how important they could be in a general election either this autumn or next spring. I mean, I think it will be fascinating. I think that they haven't had that much media scrutiny. It'll be very interesting to see how they stand up to questioning from Joe Coburn. Isabel is obviously sitting opposite me, ready for tonight, and Jack Blanchard from Politico. I think it will be a very interesting question, because from the outside, Swinson seems a more logical choice for the Lib Dems than Ed Davey. But Ed Davey has run quite an energetic campaign, and Swinson's campaign appears to have slightly suffered from that kind of Ming Vars worry that, you know, she appears to be very worried that this is hers for the taking as long as she doesn't drop it. And you know how that can sometimes lead to a slightly unnatural feel to a campaign.
Now, Isabel, you're going to have a minor role in tonight's festivities. You're going to be a panellist with Joe Coburn of the BBC as the MC of the debate. What do you think the Lib Dem candidates are looking for? Because let's face it, this is a party that ever since they've heard their last leader was resigning, they've seen an extraordinary reversal in their fortunes. They're pretty much level pegging with Labour at about 20% in the polls. They'll be feeling that they're onto a good thing, and I imagine they'll want to keep it.
Yes, they have had a real reversal of fortunes, and earlier this year we were all writing them off saying that the departure of a group of Labour MPs and some Tories to form the independent group, or Change UK as it became showed that the Lib Dems had failed to provide a centre ground voice in politics. Now, obviously, they're doing much better than that mess that those independent MPs then created. And I think what members will be looking for is evidence that whoever takes over will be able to continue that momentum beyond Brexit as well, actually. And there's a real question about what their attitude might be if Britain exits with no deal, whether they will campaign to rejoin the European Union, or whether they will have to ditch Europe as an issue, which will be emotionally very difficult for some of their members who have become sort of galvanised by Brexit. I mean, their slogan in the European elections was "Bollocks to Brexit." And
at the time, James was so critical of it, weren't you, James? You said it was
very
dreadful,
upset.
Very rude. And by the way, they smashed it, because this phrase demonstrated to those who were angry about Brexit, by the way, a lot of people, that the Lib Dems were just as... To me, James,
yes,
this seems to be
like
a masterstroke. I think you should apologise right now.
No, why wouldn't
to the
apologize?
Lib Dems.
Yes, because in the same way that I don't mean Donald Trump debasing public debate, coarsening it, is something to be applauded, even if it is effective.
Well, I think making racist comments is slightly different just to say
bollocks.
No, bollocks
to Brexit.
It worked, didn't it? It obviously did work, but lots of debasing of public discourse can work. It doesn't mean this is something that we should applaud or say is a good thing. It is of a different stripe to Donald Trump, but it is exactly the same shock tactics, that you're going to say things that people shouldn't say, that people then latch onto it. Obviously, I'm not equating it on a moral level, but that coarsening of public debate is something that I think we'll all look back on in years to come and regret, because where does it go next? Where does it, honestly?
Will they get naked in their next campaign? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm suggesting kind of once you've crossed this particular line, what's the next line that you cross in terms of a language that you're prepared to use?
Well, I imagine, Isabel, the Lib Dems are thinking, what's next? And the answer is maybe they'll be a party of official opposition, maybe back in government. And the question, one that Matthew Paris raises in his magazine article this week, is whether Remain is going to have life after Brexit.
Yeah.
Whether this band of brothers, as Matthew Paris puts it, are going to stay together in some form, what that might be. And if the Lib Dems are the keepers of this Remain flame, as they finally seem to be after years of trying, how do they keep that flame burning?
Yeah, I think the word that they are really frightened of, James, is talking about sort of what next after bollocks to Brexit, is the C word, which is coalition, and how on earth they can have a role in sort of public discourse that basically involves them ruling out working with any party in government, given the damage that did to them in the 2015 elections. So they've ruled out formal coalitions with parties, and they've said that they wouldn't do anything in any circumstances that would put Jeremy Corbyn into Downing Street. So what does that mean? They're always going to be the sort of the complainy moany party. Perhaps that actually works for them.
I think there is a kind of interest. This tension is interesting, which is, what do they do if we have an election before Brexit and then we have a very hung parliament where no one can do anything where it's not possible to put together a governing coalition or a majority for a Queen's speech, at least, without some Lib Dem participation. I think on one level, I think a Jo Swinson victory would be good for UK politics, though, because I think it's very important for the union, I think, that we have Scottish MPs, doing jobs that don't just relate to Scotland. I mean, there's something, there's something, you can't have a situation where the only thing that Scottish MPs do at Westminster is debate Scottish issues. You need them to debate UK-wide issues, I think, as part of the way, and have a kind of UK-wide political profile as one of the ways that you demonstrate some of the benefits of a union.
And also good for the Lib Dems to have their first female leader, given they haven't had a great record on women, not just in terms of leading the party, but in terms of existing as MPs over the past few decades.
I have to say that I personally would find Jo Swinson a lot more interesting and persuasive, potentially, than Ned Davey.
She's not very sweary either, so James will like.
What about James? Will she get your vote, James?
I think politically she carves out more clear space and is a more distinctive figure than Ed Davey.
And of course, she wouldn't just be the first female Lib Dem leader. She would be a mother of two children, and her youngest child is barely a year old. So that is, quite an impressive feat to pull off.
I think Jo Swinson comes across as a very sort of gentle person, but she's got a kind of steely toughness to her that it isn't always immediately evident. I think it'll be quite interesting if she does become leader, to see whether she ever says that annoying phrase in politics, which is as a mother, which obviously sort of floored Andrea Leadsom in the Tory leadership contest, because Jo Swinson is very anti women just being sort of written off as mothers, and she found it very annoying when she had her first child that everyone asked her how she was coping with parenthood, but no one asked her husband, who was then an MP, Duncan Hames, how he was coping, even though they were doing shared parenting. And she, in fact, introduced shared parental leave.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to hear more about the Spectator's choice for a Lib Dem leader, well, James and I's choice anyway, Jo Swinson, then Katie Bowles
was obviously impartial ahead of tonight's debate, we should say.
We would expect nothing less.
Full, yeah.
But Katie Bowles has interviewed Jo. It's on her Women with Bowles podcast channel, and you can get it by Googling Women with Bowles. Well, actually, maybe you shouldn't Google that.
Coarsening of political debate.
Okay, maybe just go to spectator.co.uk/ what is it, Cindy? Bowles.